The Color Purple, a book about not just finding yourself, but being allowed to. Throughout this book, we hear the life of Celie, a young girl who found herself trapped in a life of rape, abuse, and hard work. This girl has several siblings that after the death of her mother, she is left to take care of, and has two forced children with who she believes is her father. We hear nothing more about the two children, Adam and Olivia, until much later. Another key character in our story is Nettie, the loving sister of Celie. She is destined to marry Mr., but their father will not allow it. Instead, Celie, being the oldest daughter, is sent off to marry Mr. and tend to his untamable children. Nettie later on runs away from their childhood home to move in with Celie and Mr. Mr. kicks her out before too long, saying that they can no longer be of help to her, and Nettie wishes to begin her own life. She also disappears for much of the story. At around this time in the book, the storyline zooms in on Mr.'s son, Harpo, as he is beginning a family of his own. He meets the powerful and independent Sophia, who he intends to marry, but she is not one that can be controlled. Harpo sees the abusive ways of his father and how that gets Celie to listen to him and tries to strategy for himself. This does not go well and leads to Sophia leaving with their children. Around this time, Mr.'s past love, Shug Avery, makes an appearance in this story. Once it becomes public that she is very ill, Mr. takes her under her wing and brings her home. Celie must take care of her. This becomes a slow love story to be told throughout the rest of the book.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about The Color Purple, the book written by Alice Walker, published in 1982. The first thing that we're going to talk about is one of the first letters that she wrote in the book. Quick summary about it is where we basically find out that she's pregnant with her father's kid. And I think it was Olivia, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing about it is, like, this is where you also learn about all the abuse that her father's doing to her and the raping.
Because her mom is super sick and just can't deal with it anymore.
Yeah, and really can't take care of her or any of her, like, siblings.
Yeah.
That she's kind of getting, like, preyed on, being weak and everything.
Yeah, and also we also have to talk about how she really kind of stepped up and kind of came in charge, because when the father started looking at Nettie, her younger sister, as somebody to potentially rape or abuse, she kind of stepped up and said, "I'll lay down for you. I'll be your pleasure."
Not yeah, that. So she I think didn't want her sibling, at least she didn't want Nettie to have to go through the same thing that happened to her, even though since she had already been through the trauma, she was basically risking herself again, letting her know that I can handle this, that, like, I need to be there, since you figure out, like, her mom died.
Yeah.
That's one of the other first things.
And she ends up having two kids.
Yeah. Yeah,
Olivia and Adam, which we really don't talk about
because she
much.
Doesn't really know what
happened.
So, like, since she's only 14, when all of this is happening, she doesn't really understand what her father does with any of the kids.
Exactly.
Like, after her second one, she kind of thinks that he just sells it to get rid of it, but doesn't fully know.
Yeah, because, like, in the book, she talks about how she doesn't think that she killed him, but she thinks that he sells them.
Yeah, to another family that wants them, but... Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, like, takes us off into the next... letter that we should talk about, where she kind of gets married. No, she does get married to Mr. when originally she wanted, or the Mr. wanted to get married
to Nettie.
Yeah, Nettie.
And I think this is another time where, like, yeah, her father didn't want Mr. to marry Nettie, but she was also kind of taking that role that, like, I need to do this, mm-hmm. because I think she really looked to Nettie as someone that she doesn't want to go through anything mm-hmm. that she had to go through.
Yeah, for real. And also, I think why Pa in the book was so kind of...
abusive?
Strict. Not abusive, but strict on why Nettie's not getting married. Like, one of the quotes he said was, "You'll never be able to marry Nettie, not now, not ever." Mm-hmm. And that was because... Celie was there. Celie was there and basically protected her, but now since she's getting married off, he thinks this is a perfect time, but that goes into our next.
But I think it's kind of how, like, he looks at her. Like, he looks at them as, like, objects. Like, they're used.
For real.
They're not like they're not, he's looking at them like, are they a virgin or are they not?
Yeah.
Like, have I used them?
Yeah, and that's another thing because, like, when Celia is married off to Mr., the conversation between Mr. and Pa is where he literally does not say her name, Celia. We haven't even quite figured out the main character's name yet. He's just calling her, she's a cow, she's a cow, she's a cow.
But I think that's a part of him, like, he obviously feels some sort of shame for doing it, but he doesn't want anybody else to know how he's abusing them. That, like, because he knows that they're not virgins or anything because he's the one figuring this out, abusing them.
And the actual, like, first line in the book before it even says, "Dear God," is, "You better not never tell nobody but God, I'll kill your mommy."
Yeah.
So that's really the shame behind, you can't let anyone know this is happening.
Yeah, like, it's strictly for he wanting pleasure, but knowing that it's wrong. Mm-hmm.
But going back to what I was talking about, how Celie was protecting Nettie this whole time, after Celie moves off with Mr., right after, I think it's a letter right after Nettie comes to live with Celie because Pa was trying to make moves on her. And that's basically where we get, where we learn about the relationship of Nettie and Celie, where that relationship is super important to the plot of this whole entire book, I would say.
Yeah. So, like, the next letter that I think brings some sort of importance is the letter when she's, like, that marrying off. Like, we kind of already talked about that, but I think it's, like, that next, like, key happening because, like, the letters don't go in strict order because she's kind of all over with her storyline, which makes it kind of confusing.
Kind of hard to read. So, like,
yeah,
it's really, you have to kind of connect with the characters, connect with the author on how she's writing, because it's really hard to connect and, like,
yeah, and it's just looking at those key points. So, like, so the first kind of letter is showing off the abuse that her father's, like, doing, and then you moving on to marrying him off, and it's kind of that time period where this was a norm of what was happening to him.
But to also think that just by page 12, we've already seen Celie have 2 children, been pulled out of school, had her mother died, and we haven't even quite realized her name is Celie yet.
Yeah.
And especially because by page 12, something that is very, consistent throughout the book is that there's a very heavy tone of abuse between Mr. to Celie, because it says that on her wedding day, she was being abused by his children, who were throwing rocks at her and then just doing all these terrible things. And
she got a gouge in her head, didn't she, from a rock that was thrown?
Her chest and her head.
Yeah.
And then this taking on to, like, an emotional level, that it's not just, like, that physical abuse, that all of this is staying with her. And, like you said, we're only on page 12 when all of this is happening.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have to imagine she's 14. How far in her life is she really, that she can sum it up in 12 pages, but there's so much happening in 12 pages. Yeah, it's
like,
is this happening in a week? Is this happening in a month? Like, it's
been at least 2 years.
Yeah, you don't really see that until you get into and start inferring and thinking about what's happening with the book and, like, go further into the book that you actually see, like, even though it's been 3 letters, it's been 2 years, you said?
Mm-hmm.
So,
like, I think this is a book you can read, like, 3 times and still not understand all those little pieces of detail that's happening. Like, there's some that are just plain sticking out, like, mama's dead.
Yeah.
Like, you understand that, but then understanding, like, all these other little parts that's going on in it.
For real. And then the next letter that we're going into is with the relationship of Nettie and Celie. Nettie gets kicked out for the reason of what we find out later in the book, but the reason is because Mr. tried to make a move on Nettie while she was living with them, and she fought back, and he did not like that kind of
not respecting him as, like, the man.
Yeah, and she kind of saying, kind of, like, diminishing his kind of his authority, I guess, of not letting him do that, not letting him rape her, not letting him touch her in the places. So, wait. Do you...
Okay, Okay, back to the letters that we were talking about. So there is that kind of confusion. Is Mr. Lily trying to, like, touch her or anything?
Because
you learn later on that that's what's happening.
Nettie's letters, you learn the reason why Mr. kept the letters from him. And I guess that's a big part that we should probably skip on for right now and go talk about later. But you really find out that the reason she got kicked out was because he
is trying to abuse her.
Yeah, and she's not having it.
And she's never had to, like, deal with that from Pa. So, like, she's kind of, like, no, like, she can stand up.
Because
she's always had someone showing her how to stand up for herself that she can kind of do that too.
It actually says that she hurt him bad enough that he was, like, limping back.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think something else that we should address about all these letters is that right now it's to Dear God.
Yeah.
That she doesn't feel comfortable. She can't say this to anybody or she's going to get killed.
Yeah, I didn't realize that till you actually just said that, because going back to what Pa said was, don't tell anybody but God.
Yeah.
I just figured that out. That's so cool.
And that, like, also, she only feels really comfortable. Like, she wants to let it out, and the only way she can is telling God, because I think she's hoping that he answers her.
Yeah, but also I also feel like she's hoping that he's not really reading it, or no one's reading it. I think she's trying to just get it out, spill it out, and have someone to talk to, because
she doesn't have anyone.
No.
I mean, she thinks she's
she has Nettie, but she can't write.
But she's trying to, like, keep Nettie kind of hidden, like, in the closet, in the dark, like, not knowing that all of this is happening, because she doesn't want her to suffer the same trauma that she's been through.
Yeah, totally.
So, another letter that's big is Harpo, who is, like, kind of
Mr. Sun.
Yeah.
And yeah.
The way she brings characters in is kind of different.
It's very abrupt.
It's very, very abrupt. It's like Harpo's a little kid, and then the next letter, Harpo's a grown man.
Yeah.
So
you have characters being forgotten, characters being brought in, which I think what makes it another kind of hard read.
For
and a
real.
Hard aspect, because you're like, where did this character go? Why is this character coming in?
But also by her writing to God, I mean, we would assume that God already, like, knows all these people.
That's
so
true.
There's no need for this introduction. So I think that's also a simultaneously very, like, smooth transition and way to, like, keep the book almost in character.
Yeah, that's a great, great connection, because carry on.
Because, like, she's not following a sort of, like, timeline.
Yeah.
She's, like, writing. It's almost like she's writing when something major is happening. And then she's like, I have to spill this out. I have to tell someone because I don't have anybody to tell it to. That she's not going to write about it. It's not like a diary or a journal. It's a letter when something's big happening. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think that's another, like, I think we want to look at it like it's a diary. Like, this is what happened today or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's not at all.
It's not at all what it
she
is.
She needs help. She wants to know what all these huge things are happening.
So, to get back to the letter, we are introduced to Harpo, who is Mr.'s oldest son, and we find out that he is coming to Seely because he is in love with this girl, and he wants to marry her, and she's pregnant, and he just kind of loves her, from what we've
in
seen.
In the book, though, Harpo kind of seems, like, timid to tell tell Mr. about it, because Sophia is also introduced in this, and the author kind of produces Sophia as this big, bad girl who's, like,
bad in a good way, though. Like,
bad in a good way.
Very independent, very mental forward
thinker. Yeah.
The author kind of used a word for her as, like, an Amazon woman, and I really totally agree with it, because further on, I mean, you can see totally the aspects of being an independent and just kind of rock star woman.
She's described as, like, a tree. She's, like, a tree of a woman, both because she's, like, taller than Harpo, but also because she just is very, like, solid in her morals.
So I think in, like, every way, it's not like she's tearing down Harpo, but making that like timid, totally different, the opposite.
For real.
Her.
Yeah. And Sophia is a good person to talk about right now because right now in this book, we've been introduced to Suge, a great character, but she's kind of broken down right now. Celie is really broken down with all the abuse, all the sexual interactions happening with Mister, and how she's just not feeling it. And it goes to the part of where they get married.
Harpo and Sophia get married, and after this, Celie finally has a friend to talk to, being Sophia. But after a while, Harpo eventually comes to Celie and starts to recognize that his father is beating Celie, and asks how he can start beating Sophia so that she'll listen the same way that Celie does.
Yeah.
So I think that just like that, you have a woman that's so great, like that Amazon woman.
Yeah.
Like you have this woman that's so great, but the man still wants the power that he knows he doesn't have.
That he knows he's never gonna get, though, also is a true aspect, because he's really this kind of miniature man compared to his father, and up against this Amazonian tree-like woman. I mean,
yeah,
it's
that, like, he didn't marry a timid woman that he could force around, because
he originally loved her for that. He, like, spoke to Celie about it. It was like that she's this beautiful woman who's not afraid to stand up to things, but he eventually got really fed up to it.
Because it was out of the norm, though. That's why.
And he's like, this is not how my father is. My father gets to control this woman.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want that power. Because I think it's always that reaching towards the power that he's not getting.
For real. And also, I think it's another thing that we have to bring up is that the father kind of is making fun or kind of slashing at Harpo.
Making him want
that. Yeah, because when he came running up, excited to tell his father, or timid to tell his father, I would say
that he wanted.
He loved Sophia, yeah. But then
I don't think he's ever seen love. Like, his father obviously doesn't
love him, but Celie's shown him love. I mean,
yeah, but it's not like
she gets irritated, but I wouldn't say she doesn't love him.
It's not in that, like, romantic I love you way. And when he felt it, he was so excited. But his father's like, you need love as in power, not as in that romantic sense.
Yeah.
And even to go further into him tearing him down, when Harpo first asked or brought Sophia to his home so that he could say, we're going to get married, and she was pregnant, Mr. actually said, how do you know it's your kid? And so he's like, kind of hinting that Sophia is, like, not a good woman. That's just tearing down Harper.
Which kind of goes with, like, the time period, because you see so many, like, if you take this out of, like, the book sense and look at what a lot of men did that to women. I mean, like, you're, like, almost calling them, like, a whore because they're pregnant before they're married or anything, and that's happening. So, like, you need to kind of take that sense into it, that's not what these women are at all, that this is something that's happening that is uncontrollable in a sense.
Speaking of uncontrollable, going on to page 35, once Harpo attempts to actually beat Sophia, Celie describes it as she's walking over to their little house and she hears shattering glass and just screaming and a brawl, and she walks in expecting to see, you know, Harpo just beating Sophia, but in actual reality, Sophia is just beating him.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to infer, like, you obviously know what's happening, and that's that you see it in the sense that she is beating him, but what, not like started it, but what kind of like, is it because he was aching for that power?
I think it was, because honestly, he sees it with Celie, and his siblings with Mister, and then he goes to his own house where he's supposed to be the king, where he's supposed to be the top chairman or whatever, and he doesn't get that. And then when he tries to, like his father did, when he tries to get that power, when he tries to beat Sophia up, he gets immediate shock, like, right there, then and there. Like, this woman is not going to let me.
Yeah, she's not happy.
And that's where I think that starts causing problems, not because of the beating. I mean, in that time, that's normal. That's normal to see domestic abuse, no matter, like, how hard that – not how hard that is, but how bad that is. But in that time, it's
normal. It's a norm.
Yeah, it's a norm. It's
not something.
But – it's more of he wants this power, but she won't let him. And that's where the problems start.
And it's kind of that, like, almost like a bloodline that, like, it being a norm, they're just taught it. That, like, you have the power. It's okay. She's yours now. Like, she is an object that you have bought.
Yeah.
Putting her, like, marrying her made you buy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with that.
To carry on, we have mentioned before a woman by the name of Shook Avery, who was the former lover of Mr. And so throughout the book, Seeley once saw a picture of her and basically just like
fell in love pretty much. Or not really fell in love, but fell in love. Yeah, mesmerized by her character. Her, for up until this moment, she's always been called ugly, a cow, big. And she sees this beautiful woman on a nightstand. A
beautiful black woman who's a powerful singer.
Exactly. And she sees her on a nightstand while...
A photo of her on a nightstand.
Yeah, a photo of her on a nightstand while the process of her getting in a sexual place right now. Like,
And that was our first time really having Seeley kind of see Shug for the first time, but it was on page 46 where we actually had the first introduction between Shug and Seeley, which was very surprising because it's very clear throughout the entire letter that Seeley is very excited to meet Shug, but the first words that Shug says to Seeley is that you're ugly. And following that, we have a couple of letters in which their relationship really starts to develop because it's clear that they started at a very low point in which Shug is very cold to Seeley. But throughout that, we get to see that Seeley is really kind towards Shug and she continuously helps her and nurses her back to health to the point in which they have such a good relationship where Shug actually writes a song called Seeley's Song, which she performs at Harpo's juke joint, because during the time in which Sophia had left Harpo, he had decided to turn his house into a juke joint for people to basically hang out in. And also during this time, he had met a woman named Squeak, who is exactly what he had been looking for, a meek woman, and yet he wasn't quite satisfied because she just wasn't willing to stand up and be what he actually needed. But after this, on page 80, which is a very large jump from page 46 to page 80, we see that Sophia has returned now with a new husband who is a prize fighter, and they have a child. And we get to see a nice interaction between Harpo and Sophia in which they kind of almost rekindle the romance by dancing together and just kind of having that glimpse into what it could have been, their relationship. If they had both been willing to kind of give up that power struggle. But after that, Squeak actually breaks into the dance because she's jealous of Sophia and Harpo, and she and Sophia kind of get into it. There is a fist fight. And following that, there is a point later in the letter in which we see that Sophia and her husband and their children had been walking down the street when they had encountered the mayor of the town, and his wife, and the wife had actually told Sophia that she has very well-kept children and that she should come and work for her and take care of her own children. And to that, Sophia, in a very Sophia-ish manner, ends up beating up the mayor and is thrown into jail for that. So that is a very shocking point, which leads to a lot of Sophia's arc in which she is kind of beaten down a lot because she's in jail and is eventually re-employed by the mayor to take care of their children. So following this, we move on to page 117, in which we find a very shocking discovery, which is that Nellie is alive. As it turns out, Mr. had been withholding the letters that Nellie had been writing to Seeley from Africa, where she had gone to with who, as it turns out, are Adam and Olivia, aka Seeley's children. and she had been helping raise them, and they had been living in a village and just basically, like, been helping. So after this,
So going back to the really important letters, we have Nanny coming back, and she is with Celia's kids that she helped raise. But then you come to this discovery that Celia's father isn't her father. It's really her stepfather. And so she therefore inherits the house and inherits the convenience store, which is kind of a shocking thing because you're not expecting this man who ruined her life to not have any relation to her. So Celia, Shag, and Squeak tell the boys that they're going to Memphis, that they're going to move to Memphis and kind of have that start a new life when they're moving there because they just need to forget everything that's happening. So then we have this is where the real significance of the color purple is really brought in, which isn't till page 247 that you have that significance of what the book title is and what's happening.
During this time when they had all been living in Memphis and Celia had inherited the house, she had decided to go back to her hometown and redo the house. And during this time, Shug had basically run off with this, like, 19-year-old kid who was in the band, and she promised Celia that she was going to come back in a year or so, but it had passed a year, and at this point, Celia had gone through this intense kind of lapse of almost depression. But during this time, when she had been redoing her house, she had kind of discovered her own self-love and realized that Shug helped her realize that she was, like, a good person who could be loved, but it was her own journey during this time that she found
and
that
love. I think it's also noticing that her father, who's not really her father, is dead, and he was the one not allowing her to love herself. It wasn't that she wasn't able to. It was never experiencing it and never really having that being allowed to.
Mm-hmm. And this carries on to page 259, in which we get to see her and Mister, whose real name is actually Albert, start to grow closer. During this time, Celia comes out just straight up as a lesbian. She says, "I just don't like men at all." And she and Albert start to bond over Shug. He apologizes for beating her, for withholding the letters, and he's kind of learned to take care of himself. And that's definitely a major character development because we've been able to see all these characters grow.
Which is both about that, like, self-love that you have to find, that they had to find themselves before they could share it with someone else. And I think that Albert, who you learned was Mister, the friendship that they needed, but they both had to grow to get that friendship. And so then, like, the one on 285, which is the last letter, that does a really good job, which the story is so all over, does a good job of wrapping it up, but still kind of leaves you in a question.
Mm-hmm. Because during this time, we had already learned that Nettie was in Africa with the children, and after this, the first bit of the last letter is that Nettie and the children had come home, and we get to see this very, like, defining moment where we had realized throughout the book that time has really been moving. It's been 20 or 30 years because they're described as, like, two old women who have seen each other for the first time, and we get to see Harpo and Sophia and Squeak and all the children sitting there, and Albert and Shug and Celia all on the porch for when Nettie first sees them, and Celia gets to see her children for the first time, and it's just made it seem as if everything was right for the first time throughout this entire book. And the last line is, I think this is the youngest we've ever felt, which is it speaks a lot to the book because she started out at age 14 already a grown woman. And she's just kind of described as this, like, matured woman throughout the entire book. But
never really having the age to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, it's just the trauma and the experiences that she went through that made her such an, like, old, wise, protective woman, mm-hmm. and now you're getting it's actually she's that, like, you can see it, that wrinkled old woman
mm-hmm.
sitting on a porch or whatever, watching just those classic things that you would see an elderly woman.
And yet, this is the youngest she's ever felt.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, going into the characters, the different types of main characters and sub-characters, and their character development is really important in this book because that's basically what we rely on.
Especially being the book is so confusing.
Yeah,
that you need, like, what the characters, so, and who they're writing to, so you can really understand what's happening.
Our first main character is Celie, one of the main characters of the story.
Yet you don't learn her name until, like,
exactly.
20 pages
yeah.
in. But yet you know so much about her. You know all the trauma and the experiences she's been through, but you don't even know her name.
Yeah, and even if the author writes her and writes her story so well, you can, even though you haven't been through the process of abuse or rape or
the
domestic
things she
abuse,
has been through.
Yeah, you can still kind of connect with her on a, like, more emotional level. Because
you're not
people.
Just referring to her as a name and
yeah.
all the things she's been through.
Exactly.
And abuse is something that comes up a lot in her story, but it's also something that's, like, very powerful to her character arc because she starts as a woman who has been, like, abused by her father, by her spouse, by just all these different people in her life. But with the help of Shook Avery, she really is able to come into her own and becomes, like, a very powerful, independent woman, much like Sophia.
Exactly. And going into Sophia, one of the next main characters, probably not as main as some of the others,
but very powerful.
Yeah, very, very powerful. I personally love this character, one of my favorite characters, just because she is such a badass woman. Like, one of those people who come into the story and just kind of changes it. She, I don't know about you guys, but I would say she's one of the characters that changed the story,
and she developed a lot too.
Yeah, she developed, and she also helped other characters develop too.
Yeah.
And, like, developing Celie, developing Harpo.
To go into more how she developed Celie, I found it really interesting when she had, like, come to Celie after the first time that Harpo had attempted to abuse her and said, you know, like, why is this happening? Is happening. Like, Celie admits that she's jealous because she wants to have a loving relationship, and I feel like that's also a moment where Celie really has that eye-opening moment, and if it hadn't been so for Sophia, then we might not have had that.
Exactly, and that's why I love Sophia so much, is because she's so straightforward, and you don't see this type of character other than in the guys, but I mean a positive character in this story. So she is such an important character to the story, to the character development, to everything that really means about the story, about the color of purple.
Especially since we already added, like, she's described as the Amazon woman and everything, and I think that doesn't do her enough justice.
Yeah, for real.
Because of how she also goes through the traumatic experiences, but she
overcomes
comes out,
it.
Yeah, she comes out of it a different way. And I think that's how she helps develop the other characters, is because she relates to them, but has a different way of overcoming it.
Our next character that I think we should talk about is Harpo, her husband. I don't think they've ever gotten divorced in the story, at least. So her current husband, but they did split up. They did get married to other people. We've said it before, Harpo is mainly just one of a follower. I would pronounce him as a follower.
He's
he
very
wants to
timid.
Follow into his father's footsteps and timid.
But I just don't think he has his own, like, opinion.
Well, actually, I kind of disagree, because if you, like, look throughout the book, it says, like, there's a point in which Sophia is talking with Celie, and she says, yeah, he loves to cook. Like, he loves to cook. He likes to tidy up around the house. He likes, like, spending time with the children, which is very non-traditional in comparison to, like, Albert. But that's something that's traditionally seen as, like, more of a female role. And so while he is trying to follow in his father's footsteps by, like, having that kind of traditional family lifestyle, he still does have those, like, very unique qualities about him.
So I see where you're coming from. You're saying, like, Harpo is more of, he has his own person, but he doesn't let that person shine, or personality shine, I guess, because of the holdbacks from his father and the current society and environment that he's currently
And it's reinforced because Sophia is very obviously the, like, so-called man of the house. And because she's so powerful.
She's
and,
more dominant.
And he naturally wants to do the things that are considered more feminine, such as cooking and spending time with his kids.
Yeah. The next character we're going into, I think, is Nettie. She's out of the book for over half of it. But she still brings, like, even when she's gone, even when the readers are thinking she might be dead or she is dead, she still has that
powerful
aspect
presence.
And powerful presence in the character development of Celie. I mean, that's why I feel like Celie's going on, is because she knows for
and
her
I,
sister.
Yeah, and I think it's really the development of Celie. Because Celie, like, she does everything because of Nettie. Like, she goes through the abuse because she doesn't want Pa to do it to her. Nettie, she, like, does this all because she's looking out.
Exactly.
And so, in a way, I feel like even though Nettie's a bear, she's holding her back a little without even trying. It's that strong, older sibling, like,
yeah,
presence.
And I want to go back on to what you say about what you're saying about holding her back. I feel like Nettie is such a smart and kind person that by holding her back, she was held back in the midst of the location they were at. But once she got into the world, once she became a missionary and traveled the world, you really saw her more shining, more being that person, more being in the aspect of Celie, of being her own person, being that person that takes charge.
Her bit in Africa, I really loved, like, she wasn't there for over half the book, but once she came back with the letters, it was just letter after letter of us really learning more so about, like, Nettie and who she is.
And
like,
I think she's
Celie
like Sophia in, like,
yeah.
that sense.
Yeah.
That, like, she became powerful without, like, Sophia, I think, always had that natural power to her, and Nettie kind of developed in it. Like, you're seeing the three stages of a woman.
For real.
In a sense, like, Celie is that timid, like, going through the trauma and experiences. Nettie is the learning from it, trying to develop herself. And then Sophia is what they all hope to be, is that, like,
Amazonian. Yeah.
But at the same time, with those three different people, like, Celie's her journey and her power comes from, like, overcoming obstacles. I feel like Sophia's almost comes from, like, a place of anger because she's, like, beating up the mayor and, you know, growing up
well,
in the family environment,
like,
that she had.
Like the story says with Sophia, when she comes and pretty much stands up to Celie for saying what happened with
Harpo,
she basically is like, I came from a family raised by men and my uncles and my fathers and all these people. And she's just kind of like an activist with it, I would say. Like, she does not care for men. Like, she married Harpo because they fell in love.
Yeah.
Not because
he was a strong man who could, like, so
yeah.
not take care of her. Moving on to Albert, yeah. He is, I would say, probably one of the most interesting characters in the book because he starts out as this, like, cruel, horrible man, and from Celie's eyes, he's just so terrible, and he tries to assault Nettie, and he holds back the letters, and he just makes Celie's life a living hell. But we also get to see through Shug's perspective that he used to be, like, a really good guy, like,
honestly, if I want to say something, I think Albert's character development is the most, I guess you could say, powerful.
Or
more
drastic.
Drastic. Drastic is the word that I want to use because he, like you were saying in the very first few letters, he was this man. And how Nettie and Celie kind of explained it was they were falling in love and they wanted to be. And then when he didn't get his way, he kind of became that nasty, cruel character that nobody really liked. I don't know if anybody really liked him at that stage, but as he grew, as Shug came in and developed with him, he more changed. I mean, Shug said, like, Shug was leaving, and she was like, don't leave, or, Celia was like, don't leave, he beats me, and he changed for Shug, so I guess love is powerful in this sense.
Yeah. I think the other thing about it is he's almost like a monster that, like, wears a mask that, like, if you can take the mask off, you see, like, this, you see Albert, like, the man that they love and everything, and then when he puts that mask on,
he's Mr.
Yeah.
Like, and I love how the author uses that and uses the names as...
Celia didn't
how
even
you
know his first name until Shug came.
And just, like, we didn't know Celia's name either. Like, we didn't know who she was until we learned her story. I think that's the other thing. We couldn't make up our mind about him until...
Exactly.
And then when we finally met Albert, we were like, that's who he is. He's not just Mr.
Yeah.
He's Albert.
And he and Celia eventually get to have that, like, really good friendship where you grow to, like him as a character. And he's able to take care of himself and has turned into, like... wise old man.
But I think that's when she doesn't, on a base of, like, romantically love him, because she can't, she's fully a lesbian now, that she doesn't feel like she needs to, like, hide behind being with
a married woman,
and, like, taking care, doing the wifely duties. She can be her own person and admit to things that she may have not wanted to admit to in the past.
Finally, Shug.
Yeah, Shug. I would like to say she played an important role for Celia's character, because Shug, at the very beginning, was like this idol, this person that she wanted to be, the person that she wanted to grow to be. And then as soon as Shug came in, it
was
like...
She was horrible to her, though.
Yeah, she was super horrible, but I feel like she still kind of idolized her.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as they were getting closer and closer, it wasn't more of an idolization. It was more of, like, a look, like, I'm looking up to you, like, as a sister, as a mom, as a someone, because her mom was sick. She didn't really, like, get that.
I think Shug is, like, a good person that you can mentally see in your mind when she's changing. Like, you can fully understand where, like, you said, like, where it was just looking up to her. You can kind of, like, see that change
when you're
in your mind.
Another thing that I found interesting is that, thinking back to it, if you try and, like, kind of picture any of the characters in your mind, I feel like Shug is the only one who got, like, an actual description,
and you can really picture her. But I think that's why she is such an idolizing character, because you see... the kind of descriptions we get for the other characters make it seem more lifelike.
Celia very obviously loves her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alright, so let's move on. What were some of the things you guys kind of really liked about this?
I like that you the development of the characters. How you don't want to put the book down because, like, you're wanting to see how they're going to grow and how they're going to change. Because it's a hard read. Like, I think that's...
Yeah, it's definitely a more difficult read than most.
Especially because of just, like, her being illiterate. Like, she can write, and you can mostly understand it, but you're also having some of these grammar problems.
And intense time jumps.
That's one of my biggest dislikes, but also I'm okay with it because it relates back to the story. But is the time jumps. You can go from reading a letter, like, every single day where it's, like, a new letter, but then you go from, like, a letter that's talking about this specific subject to a completely different subject, and they're older.
And that's all within, like, a range of, what, 3 pages?
Yeah, for real. Like, it's 3 pages. It's just kind of wacky. It's really... You go from one subject, and then you go to another, and then you go back to that subject, and then you go to a completely different
one. But I don't think that this could have been written in anything but a letter.
Yeah.
Like, letter form.
Exactly.
You can't imagine it in a different way.
And you wouldn't enjoy it as much, I don't think.
And once you, like, step back from the book, and you actually look at, like, what page you're on, you can almost, like, feel yourself in that same time, like, growing with the characters and really feeling those years, especially with, like we said earlier, that final page where we first, like, met Celie as this 14-year-old girl, and within just a few pages, we had covered 2 years, and suddenly mm-hmm. it's been 250 pages, and it's been 30 years, and we yeah. see her as this old woman who's finally been reunited with the true family.
And I just want to point out one of my favorite things that the author did was show the two aspects of Nettie's writing and Nettie's letters compared to Celie's writing and Celie's like letter, and it really shows them. That shows their different types of characters. With Celie's writing and literature, you see that she has some struggles and she has some setbacks with spelling, grammar, different kind of words, and how she uses her sentences compared to Nettie's, which is every single letter it gets more and more intense or more literate. And Celie's just stays in one place, which kind of results to their lifelike or their environment. With Celie's, she's held in one place. She got taken out of school at 14. I don't want to say didn't want to learn more, but she didn't have the chance because she was in the midst of taking care of a family, taking care of her mental needs, meaning how she got raped, how she got abused.
That traumatic experience.
Yeah, yeah. And Nettie's she was blocked from that because of Celie. And then as soon as it started to happen, she ran away and found a family who actually loved her, actually took care of her, and went on this trip to Africa.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you can see the growth that Nettie went through her letters.
Nettie is also a lot better at, like, tracking that time, I feel, partially because we also get to see how Celie's children are growing, because Nettie so very clearly, like, cares about them, and we're able to see them grow.
And then also, like, the season changing, you
mm-hmm.
can
yeah.
experience that.
But they're not, like, the typical seasons
yeah.
that we're used to. It's, like, drought season.
Yeah.
Like, disease season, it's all these
mm-hmm.
different things that we're able to kind of get used to real quick.
I think with the writing of it, I really would have loved to see, like, Sophia's writing about it, and, like, kind of, like, the thoughts in her, because she's such, like, it's the growth of those three characters, I think, that is a strong, like, presence in the book, that just seeing the way Sophia sees certain things, like, her relationship with her, like, all of those different things, what she thinks of Mr., all those things.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, so based off of the book, there is also a movie and a musical, and I know that Austin is currently watching the movie.
I'm about halfway through the movie, and I would like to say the book is better, but everybody says that. But the things of in the movie you see is, speaking of that drastic time change, there's a scene in the movie where it goes from a girl singing and doing chores, and the camera kind of like backs up, and then she's turned into a full adult, like she's an adult, and I think that's super cool how they did that. And it's just I don't want to say completely different, but like some things are different. Like we don't find out that Nettie was almost sexually assaulted, and she fought back until later in the book, but it really happened when Nettie got kicked out. That's the reason why she got kicked out, and that's the reason why Albert or Mr. didn't let Celie have the letters.
I think what's like key to point out with the movie is it's rated PG-13.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the book, I would say, is a completely different rating. I would say it would either be rated R or...
I think it's just that mature level. Like,
yeah.
It's hard to understand. Like, I don't think a 13-year-old can read the book and fully understand what's happening.
Unless if you have, like, a mature level of reading
yeah.
or literature.
Especially
behind
her writing. Like, certain words that she uses is
like,
not...
Like, ask, she spells A-S-T instead of A-S-K-E-D.
Yeah, and then when she's talking about, like, when she's talking about her being pregnant, she doesn't know she's pregnant.
She just says,
I'm big. Like... You have to, on a level, she's still a child.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up the question, do you guys think this should be a banned book?
I
personally don't think it should be a banned book because it's so relevant to things that are happening. Like, it has her, just has all these different advances that, like, are still so relevant now that I don't think this book will never not be relevant to people. But then you need to read it at a time when you're going to understand what's happening and take something away from it. But I don't think that, like, you always take away stuff that you are forced to read, like, for a class.
Yeah, I want to go back to what you said about the time and how it really, the problems and the solutions really don't change. This book was written and published in 1982, and now it's 2019, and you can see some of the same problems.
Like the abuse women have and not
exactly
doing anything about it.
Exactly. But on your question is, should this be a banned book? I personally do not think so, because the first page is so kind of like
intense
that you would read the first page and be like, no, I don't want to read this, or yes, I want to read this. But I do think that there should be some level of, like, no, you cannot read this. I wouldn't want a 10-year-old reading this, because there is topics about having sex. There is topics
and
about
I
the
think
females.
That your family or your teacher has to, like, be willing to answer the questions that are going to be asked.
Yeah.
And I think a teacher, like, of a freshman wouldn't want to be answering some of these questions.
Exactly.
Because on a certain level, that's a family, what you want your child to know or not to know. But, like, if a senior was asking a teacher certain questions, I feel like that's more of a conversation that would be easier to have.
Yeah, exactly. A more comfortable conversation, because, good book or not, this is a very uncomfortable book. Reading it, I was like, oh my God. And I have a pretty mature level of reading and literature behind me, so it's just comfortability and also matureness reading the book you have to have.
I also think that it should not be a banned book, but I feel like, well, it would be okay for, like, a high school library. I don't think it should be assigned to, like, underclassmen.
You're right.
We are underclassmen, but we're also in an AP class where we have been able to prove that we have that certain level of maturity.
And we also chose the book. The book wasn't, like, we're not doing group discussions about the book. We're choosing to talk to our peers about it, and I think that's what a different level is. Your understanding should be able to handle this, which at times may not be the same for freshmen, because she does say the words, like, titties and certain things that freshmen would choose.
Laugh and giggle at that, but in the story, that is such an important kind of thing, where she says titties and pussies and those types of words, because it's
what she knows.
Yeah, she doesn't know, like, the technical terms for it, and that's a really important, because honestly, if the author put words like vagina or breast in it, it wouldn't leave the same impact as it does now.
Especially because she doesn't know the basis of being pregnant. She says, like, big. That's
exactly
where you can kind of relate it back to, that, like, she doesn't even know something that is so basic at
exactly
a level.
And we just, there's some kids who just can't quite handle that yet. So on a closing note, we would like to talk a bit more about the title, which is The Color Purple, and how exactly that relates to the book. So early on in the book, we see a scene in which Celie is standing inside of a fabric store, and she says that she would like a purple dress, but it's too expensive a fabric, and she just can't have it. And it's something that at first doesn't seem very significant, but later on in the book, there is a point in which she is decorating her own bedroom in the house that she had gotten because it was her father's, and she has become a very, like, powerful, independent woman, and she decides to paint her entire room purple and red and gold and all these very powerful colors. And I feel like that really speaks a lot to her, like, emotional journey, because she starts at a point where she can't quite, you know, afford to have these good emotions because she's in such an intensely bad place, but then she eventually becomes that powerful.
Like, I think we've already kind of touched on it, that, like, being allowed to have all of, like, she doesn't even feel allowed to talk about the experiences she's having. She has to write letters to God.
Yeah.
That, like, I think when she finally gets to read that room, like you said, and she gets that significance of
that's
purple,
like, a level of power that she's never really gotten.
Yeah.
She's, like, old now, so it's kind of like I kind of relate it back to you buying your first toy or you getting your first money and you go buy your first candy bar.
Yeah.
You kind of get that sense of like
independence.
Yeah, or like whenever you get to drive a car, like you're on your own. Like
yeah.
It's just you and you being able to do everything you know you're supposed to do, but still having that allowance of being able to do it.
And just going back with some background knowledge, the color purple is normally resembled or correlated with royalty, money, and just
a lavish
power.
Lifestyle.
Yeah.
And her wanting that purple dress, she said, oh no, it's too expensive, but I will take, but there are like a red dress and that. So that's like
a burgundy.
That, yeah, a burgundy.
Like a burlap.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Just like something more basic.
And that moment is really important to the title and to the thing, because it shows like where she is wanting this purple dress, but she has to go back to the more basic, more like normal colors.
Yeah, and I just see the like really the purple like you said, it like signifies the royalty and everything behind it, and just that emotion and that level that she has been able to have.
Yeah,
that she has the kids and she gets to feel young, like you. You kind of made a point earlier that like she's old, but this is the youngest she's ever felt.
Mm-hmm.
That like that purple is also like a playful color that like
yeah.
she gets to be young again that she never had.
It's just very representative of Celie and her emotional journey and who she is as a person.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to touch on the little thing before we end is both significant parts of the color purple being brought up is. The first one is the dress where it was very at the beginning and we see Celie kind of at an emotional slash submissive stage all the way to about the end of the book where she is mentioning about the room and how she's going to color it all purple.
Yeah.
And she has grown so
yeah.
much and that's why she can get that purple room.
And I think, like, just to finish up, the last few chapters are very... in more of an order than the other chapters, or not so much jumping.
Mm-hmm.
It's like finishing up, and it's like her life is finally in a stable place that like everything seems, she has experiences and has these traumas, but everything seems to be going good for her.
Yeah.
That like she finally is who she wants to be and she can admit to it. And I think that's why this book is so relevant to us today, because we might not go through the traumatic experiences that she did, but we all have this journey and everything that kind of shapes us into what we are.
Yeah. So I think that concludes our podcast for The Color Purple.